And this is VOA 1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Katie Weaver. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak slowly, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. Today on our show, Gina Bennett presents Ask a Teacher. She answers a question from a listener in China. John Russell also reports. He tells about the popular noodle dish, ramen. And we close the show with an American story. Narrator Shep O'Neill brings us the second part of A Princess of Mars by Edgar Rice Burroughs. But first, we go to Brian Lin.
China launched a spacecraft to the moon's far side on Friday in a mission that aims to bring lunar soil and rocks to Earth. A Long March 5 rocket carried the unmanned spacecraft called Chang'e 6 to space. The launch took place at China's Wencheng Space Center in southern Hainan province. Chinese space officials declared the launch a success. Chinese officials have said the spacecraft will attempt to land in an area of the South Pole called the Aitken Basin. The area is known as the far side of the moon because it permanently faces away from Earth. NASA says the Aitken Basin is the largest impact basin on the lunar surface. The distance from the basin's lower depths to its highest points is estimated to be over 15 kilometers. That is nearly twice the height of Earth's tallest mountain, Mount Everest. If it makes a successful landing, mission leaders on the ground will direct the spacecraft to collect soil and rock from the lunar surface. During its planned 53-day mission, Chang'e 6 is expected to use its robotic equipment, including a drill, to identify and collect up to 2 kilograms of lunar material. China's spacecraft will be carrying payloads from France, Italy, Sweden, and Pakistan. U.S. law bans the American space agency, NASA, from cooperating either directly or indirectly with China on space operations. Under NASA's current plans for its Artemis program, U.S. astronauts are expected to land near the South Pole in 2026. This would represent the first human landing on the lunar surface since NASA's Apollo 17 mission in 1972. China has additional unmanned lunar missions planned as well. Chang'e 7 in 2026 will aim to further explore the South Polar area, including searching for water ice. In 2028, Chang'e 8 will carry out a series of technology tests in preparation for building a long-term science base on the moon. China is seeking to put its astronauts on the moon by 2030. It is not the first time a Chinese spacecraft has collected material from the lunar surface. The country's Chang'e 5 spacecraft traveled to the moon in late 2020 and brought back about 2 kilograms of moon rocks and dust. The mission was carried out in an area known as Oceanus Procellarum. It sits on the western edge of the near side of the moon, an area believed to have had intense volcanic activity in ancient times. But the lack of volcanic activity on the moon's far side means there will be more craters to study that were not affected by ancient lava flows. This could give scientists new chances to learn more about the moon and the solar system's early development. The Chang'e 5 mission made China only the third nation to collect lunar material and bring it to Earth, after the United States and the Soviet Union. The last such mission was in 1976, when an unmanned Soviet spacecraft collected 170 grams of moon material. America's moon exploration program included six flights from 1969 to 1972. Those missions resulted in astronauts collecting a total of about 400 kilograms of lunar rocks and soil. Leonard David is the writer of the book Moon Rush, The New Space Race. He told Reuters news agency that, if successful, the upcoming mission would be a milestone-making event. David added that the material collected from the moon's far side should help researchers fill in the blanks about unknown details of the moon's formation. I'm Brian Lynn.
Ramen is a kind of Japanese noodle dish. It might be the world's favorite Japanese food. Ramen has increased in popularity in the U.S., South Korea, and other countries. The dish is also growing in popularity with foreign visitors to Japan. Nielsen IQ is a service that reports on product sales. It said sales of ramen in the United States have risen 72% since 2000. Technomic, a food service industry research company, said versions beyond the traditional soup are appearing in many restaurants. Del Taco, a Mexican chain, recently introduced shredded beef birria ramen, for example. Ramen remains very popular in Japan. Some Japanese go to ramen shops two or three times a week. In Tokyo, people sometimes wait for an hour to get ramen. Often cooked right before your eyes, the noodle dish starts at around $6.50. It comes in different flavors, and there are local versions, too. Flavors include salty, soybean-based shoyu or miso paste. Sometimes the dish is spicy. Sometimes there is no soup at all, but a sauce to dip the noodles in. Foreign visitors are becoming increasingly interested in ramen, too. Frank Striegel guides visitors to ramen restaurants for a special food experience. "I'm probably a talking bowl of ramen," said Striegel, as he led a group of American tourists through part of Tokyo's Shibuya neighborhood. The group's visit is what Striegel calls the ultimate ramen experience. The tourists go to restaurants where ramen is served in very small bowls. These bowls are about 1/4 the size of a regular ramen bowl. The guests eat smaller amounts so that they can try 6 different kinds of ramen, 2 at each restaurant during the tour. It's not just, of course, about eating delicious ramen, but also learning about it, said Striegel. He is a Filipino-American who grew up in Tokyo. He calls ramen people's food. A lot of countries around the world have their version of ramen, he said. So I think because of that, it's a dish that's easy to understand. It's a dish that's easy to get behind. While the tourists were enjoying their noodles, Striegel gave a short history of ramen. He said its roots date back to the samurai period. Samurai were historical Japanese warriors. A Japanese military leader, a shogun, took a liking to Chinese noodles. That started a tradition of making local versions of ramen that continues today. Katie Sell was a student on Striegel's tour. She called ramen a kind of comfort food, especially in the winter. Get a group of friends, go have some ramen, and just enjoy it. Kavi Patel is an engineer from the U.S. state of New Jersey. He said he was happy that he included ramen on his tour of Japan, along with visits to famous places like the ancient capital of Kyoto and the deer park in Nara. I'm having good fun, he said. I'm John Russell.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
Hello. This week on Ask a Teacher, we answer a question from Sentuan in China. I really want to know the meaning of will ever be able to. Thanks, Sentuan from China. Thank you for writing, Sentuan. I am happy to answer this question. Will ever be able to is a verb phrase. Will be able to refers to possibility at a future time. Ever is an adverb. In an Ask a Teacher years ago, we explained several meanings of ever. One meaning is at any time. The word often appears in the phrase when someone is asking a question. For example, have you ever been to Zanzibar? What is the best movie you have ever seen? The difference in usage of ever in a question is so small that you might not even notice at first. But it is important to fully understand the meaning of will ever be able to. Often, we use ever in questions, such as have you ever, to add emphasis or strength to a sentence. We might use ever if we expect people to agree with us or have the same answer. For example, have you ever heard a better definition? Have you ever been yelled at for just asking a question? In these examples, ever shows a strong feeling. We can also use ever with a question we believe will have a negative answer or feeling. And we might not even expect an answer. For example, Did you ever think about me? Will I ever be able to climb Mount Everest? In these examples, we use ever because we think the answer is no. And we may not expect anyone to actually answer the question. We hope this explanation has helped you fully understand the meaning of will ever be able to, Sentuan. Do you have a question about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Gina Bennett. You just heard Ask a Teacher. And now we're joined by Teacher Gina. Hi, Gina. In your report, you said with some questions using ever, we might not even expect an answer to the question. Why would I ask a question that I don't expect anyone to answer? I don't usually talk to myself.
Well, that's a good question. A question is in what we call interrogative form. That's how we know it's a question. We usually use interrogative form, ask a question, to find out information.
Why would I ask a question that I don't expect anyone to answer?
Right? That's interrogative form, a question looking for information. But sometimes we use interrogative form not to get information, but to make a point, change a topic, show something obvious. For example,
do chickens have lips?
Exactly. You used interrogative form, but you aren't looking for information. In this case, you made a joke.
Well, thanks for coming on the show. We'll see you soon.
See you next time.
And now, the second program in our series, A Princess of Mars.
The creature with the spear was huge. There were many other similar creatures. They had ridden behind me on the backs of large animals. Each of them carried a collection of strange-looking weapons. The one with the large spear got down from the back of his animal and began walking toward me. He was almost 5 meters tall and a dark green color. Huge teeth stuck out of his face, and his expression showed much hate and violence. I immediately knew I was facing a terrible warrior. He began moving quickly toward me with the spear. I was completely unarmed. I could not fight. My only chance was to escape. I used all my strength to jump away from him. I was able to jump almost 30 meters. The green Martian stopped and watched my effort. I would learn later that the look on his face showed complete surprise. The creatures gathered and talked among themselves. While they talked, I thought about running away. However, I noticed several of them carried devices that looked very much like rifles. I could not run. Soon, all but one of the creatures moved away. The one who had threatened me stayed. He slowly took off a metal band from his arm and held it out to me. He spoke in a strange language.
Nictu Maktuta Sakota.
Slowly he laid down his weapons. I thought this would have been a sign of peace anywhere on Earth. Why not Mars, too? I walked toward him, and in a normal voice, announced my name, and said I had come in peace. I knew he did not understand, but like me, he took it to mean that I meant no harm. Slowly, we came together. He gave me the large metal band that had been around his arm. He turned and made signs with his hands that I should follow him. Soon, we arrived at the large animal he had been riding. He again made a sign with his hands that I should ride on the same animal behind him. The group turned and began riding across the land. We moved quickly toward mountains in the distance. The large animals we rode moved quickly across the land. I could tell from the surrounding mountains that we were on the bottom of a long, dead sea. In time, we came to a huge city. At first, I thought the city was empty. The buildings were all empty and in poor repair. But soon, I saw hundreds of the green warriors. I also saw green women and children. I soon learned about many cities like this. The cities were built hundreds of years ago by a people that no longer existed. The green Martians used the cities. They moved from one empty city to another, never stopping for more than a day or two. We got down from our animals and walked into a large building. We entered a room that was filled with fierce green warriors. It was not difficult to tell that these were the leaders of the green Martians. One of them took hold of my arm. He shook me and lifted me off the ground. He laughed when he did so. I was to learn that green Martians only laugh at the pain or suffering of others. This huge warrior threw me to the ground and then took hold of my arm again to pick me up. I did the only thing I could do. I hit him with my closed fist as hard as I could. The green warrior fell to the floor and did not move. The others in the room grew silent. I had knocked down one of their warriors with only my hand. I moved away from him and prepared to defend myself as best I could, but they did not move. The green Martian that had captured me walked toward me. He said in a clear voice,
"Tars Tarkas! Tars Tarkas!"
As he spoke, he pointed to his own chest. He was telling me his name. I pointed to my chest and said, "My name, John Carter." He turned and said the word, "Sola." Immediately, a green Martian woman came close. He spoke to her. She led me to another building and into a large room. The room was filled with equipment carried by the green Martians. She prepared something for me to eat. I was very hungry. I pointed to her and said the word, "Sola." She pointed at me and said my name. It was a beginning. Sola was my guard. She also became my teacher. In time, she would become a close and valued friend. As I ate my meal, my lessons in the language of the green Martians continued. 2 days later, Tars Tarkas came to my room. He carried the weapons and the metal armbands the green warriors wear. He put them on the ground near my feet. Sola told him I now understood some of their language. he turned to me and spoke slowly.
The warrior you hit is dead. His weapons and the metal of his rank are yours, John Carter. He was a leader of one small group among our people. Because you have killed him, you now are a leader. You are still a captive and not free to leave. However, you will be treated with the respect you have earned. You are now a warrior among our people.
Tars Tarkas turned and spoke softly. From beyond the door, a strange creature entered the room. It was bigger than a large dog and very ugly. It had rows of long teeth and 10 very short legs. Tars Tarkas spoke to the creature and pointed at me. He left. The creature looked at me, watching closely. Then Sola spoke about the creature.
His name is Wula. The men of our tribe use them in hunting and war. He has been told to guard and protect you. He has also been told to prevent your escape. There is no faster creature in our world, and in a fight, they can kill very quickly. Do not try to escape, John Carter. Wula will tear you to small pieces.
I continued to watch the creature named Wula. I had already seen how the green Martians treated other animals. They were very cruel. I thought, perhaps this beast can be taught to be my friend, much like a dog on Earth. I walked close to the creature and began speaking in much the same way I would speak to a dog or other animal on Earth. I sat down next to him while I talked softly. At first, he seemed confused. I believe the creature Wula had never heard a kind word. In the next several days, I gained the trust and friendship of Wula. In a few short days, Wula was my friend and fierce protector. He would remain my loyal friend as long as I was on Mars. Several days later, Sola came to me with a look of great concern.
John Carter, come with me. A great battle is about to take place. An enemy is coming near this city. We must prepare to fight, and we must be ready to flee.
Sola, what enemy is this?
A race of red men who travel our world in flying machines. A great number of their machines have come over the far mountain. Take your weapons with you and hurry.
I collected my sword and a spear. I hurried out of the building and joined a group of warriors moving toward the end of the city. Far in the distance, I could see the airships. They were firing large guns at the Green Warriors. I heard huge explosions. The Green Warriors were firing back with their deadly rifles. The air was filled with the sound of violent battle. Suddenly, a huge airship exploded. It came down crashing near me. Red Martians were falling from the side of the huge ship, and then it exploded again.
That's all the time we have for today's show, but join us again tomorrow for another VOA Learning English program. Thanks for listening. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm